Allison S. Alford, Michael E. Effetti, Benjamin M. Winward, Public Counsel, Edward L. Winner, Michael D. Sharma, and Kathy S.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. I'm Michael Oshesky, and with me is Ben Wenger. We represent Dr. Allison and his professional corporation in this case. Your Honor, the judgment entered against my clients should be reversed, and judgment should be entered for my clients in this case. The reason is because at trial, evidence, argument, and jury instructions for battery came in to the trial. And evidence, argument, lack of informed consent were also put before the jury, and lack of informed consent was not proved. So for those two reasons, and because those were the only two claims against my client that the jury heard and that there was evidence of at trial, the judgment should be reversed. First, I'd like to talk about the battery claim. The joint appendix at page 97 has an order in it that dismisses battery with prejudice. A dismissal order with prejudice does not permit the plaintiff to put on evidence argument and receive jury instructions for a cause of action of battery, yet that's exactly what happened in the trial.
Let's clear this up. My understanding, tell me if I'm correct, is that that order was the judge who tried the case didn't agree with it, but it was never vacated.
It was never vacated.
And as a result, it was the law of this case as it proceeded to trial. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right.
And that is our position on SB battery. Our position is very simple. Battery was dismissed with prejudice. It was not vacated yet. As I say, battery was instructed and the jury found against my client on it. With regards to the lack of informed consent claim, which is a negligence claim, this was a negligence case. That was what was properly before the court. The original lawsuit sought negligence, and our position is not to say the lack of informed consent is not negligence. It is. However, a lack of informed consent claim needs to be raised at some point in time so the defendant is aware that is a claim in the case. It is perfectly appropriate to file a lawsuit seeking negligence, but later, this court has instructed the bar to alert the other side when that claim is raised. In Wright versus Kay and Fiorucci versus Chin, this court has said defendants may not put on evidence of lack of informed consent information unless it's been raised as an issue in the case. In this particular case, it was not specifically pled in the lawsuit, which is fine, but it was not raised in answer to discovery. It was not designated in the expert witness designation, and despite that, the evidence was put on at trial. But moreover, even if it were properly before the court, it was not proven. The reason lack of informed consent was not proven is because their sole standard of care expert, Dr. Weinberg, did not testify clearly what the standard of care required to be stated by Dr. Allison.
I apologize for interrupting, but
yes.
You mentioned the lack of disclosure and discovery in the absence of this specific point being raised in expert disclosures. Is that literally part of any assignment of error, or is the assignment of error limited to evidentiary sufficiency?
We did raise in our petition for appeal, I believe we raised in our petition for appeal, the fact that the expert designation does not disclose the allegation of a lack of informed consent. However, I don't believe the court has to find that in order for a reversal of the judgment.
Well, what I'm asking is, I'm looking at your assignment of error 2 right now, which is the applicable assignment, am I right? And it says the trial court erred in allowing the jury to consider Ms. Brown's informed consent claim because she failed to offer sufficient evidence to support it. Is that the assignment of error you're commenting on now?
That is the assignment of error.
Is there another assignment of error that says, well, whether there's sufficient evidence or not, it doesn't really matter because it was never properly disclosed and it should have been excluded?
Well, and I don't know if this is appropriate, but under subpart A of assignment of error 2, we indicated that Dr. Weinberg was not properly designated on informed consent. So under the subpart of assignment of error 2, we raise this point.
But you raise it solely with regard to the expert designation. You, in your argument just now, you also dealt with the pleadings and the other responses to discovery, which appear to be outside of the scope of your assignment of error.
And that is true. I simply was acknowledging that the pleading does not state it one way or the other, so we need to look, and this is why assignment of error 2A exists, is because we need to look somewhere to find the allegation.
But in terms of our analysis, the only things that we are properly allowed to analyze are, number one, the expert witness designation, and number two, whether the evidence supported sending it to the jury. Do you acknowledge that?
That is true, and we did object at trial to Dr. Weinberg testifying on the lack of informed consent theory because he had not been properly designated, which has been preserved. I believe, however, there's an alternative grounds to reverse the lack of informed consent theory, and that is Ms. Brown did not consent to left-sided breast surgery. And that's the most important point to remember about this theory. A lack of informed consent theory only exists if the patient actually consents to the surgery. If there's no consent, then you don't even ask the question, was there informed consent? Here, there was right-sided breast surgery, and there was consent for that. In addition, my client, plaintiff alleges, my client also performed left-sided breast surgery with no consent. Because there was no consent to left-sided breast surgery, the radiated breast, the standard of care, I'm sorry, her failure to give consent does not give rise to a lack of informed consent. So, first of all, that element would be enough to reverse on lack of informed consent. In addition to that, Ms. Brown testified why she did not give consent to the left side radiated breast surgery. The reason is because she knew that the right side, the non-radiated breast, would, quote, heal better than if we worked on my left radiated breast. Not only did she not consent to left-sided surgery, she explained the reason is that if we just stay on the right side, it will heal better. Dr. Weinberg's testimony as to what the state of care required Dr. Allison to tell Ms. Brown was wound healing is one of the risks of performing surgery on a radiated breast. Ms. Brown knew wound healing is a problem on that surgery.
So can I interrupt you and follow up on your informed consent point? Your logic is it can't be a violation of informed consent because she didn't consent.
Correct.
All right, well, take the word informed off and just ask yourself, is it negligence for a doctor to operate on a part of the body for which the patient has never authorized the doctor to do it?
It's a battery.
Maybe, maybe not. If it's intentional, as you know from our most recent case, it may very well be a battery if he intended to go beyond the scope. But if he didn't intend to go beyond the scope, it's just simple negligence. Let's say he was told and he forgot. Why isn't that simple negligence? Don't operate on my left breast, and he forgot negligently because he didn't record it, didn't properly document it, etc. Why is that not a obvious negligence case?
Well, I think that this court has explained that in the Washburn case, for example, when a surgeon goes in to do a biopsy and does a partial mastectomy, that's battery. He might have forgotten to not do a partial mastectomy, but that doesn't change the nature of the patient only consented to...
But you know of our most recent case, right?
I do, the Mayer decision.
It's hard for y'all not to mention it because we've unpacked as much as we know how to unpack this concept right there.
And I'm looking at... from Lexis, at least, pages 6 and 7, where this court, in one paragraph, described the Washburn case and the Woodbury case, as well as the Pugsley case. But the Washburn case and the Woodbury case are exactly this case. Consent was granted to right-sided surgery, and right-sided surgery only. Consent was not granted to left-sided surgery, which is a different procedure, which is beyond the scope of the consent granted. It is exactly what this court just said a month ago in Mayer, as to what battery is. Even if one wants to claim it's negligence, it's not. He intended to go to the left breast and perform left breast revision surgery that day.
Well, that's not the holding of mirror, though. The holding of mirror is you intend to go outside the scope, not that you intend to put the knife on the wrong place.
He did go outside the scope. He in Mayer, there was an attempt to claim negligence was battery. In Mayer, the issue was, when I go in to do one level of spine fusion for spine surgery, and I only do one level, but I do it the wrong level accidentally, that's not a battery, because I tried to go to the right level, and I accidentally went to the wrong level. But when you compare that to the Woodbury case, where you're consented to go to one level of spine surgery, but you go to two, that's battery. This court has said in that case, that's battery. Here, he went into the surgery, whereas Mrs. Brown said, just go to the right side. He went into the surgery and went not just to the right side, like in Woodbury, go to one level. He went to a second side, like in Woodbury, he did a second level. That's battery as a matter of law. It is whether he did it because he was distracted or not. He intended to perform bilateral breast surgery when he was only provided authority to perform unilateral breast surgery.
You know, I find that this whole thing really puzzling and rather odd. I mean, what you may be legally correct, I'm not sure. But what you're saying is, I can't be guilty of lack of informed consent because what I did was far worse than that.
What I'm saying is slightly different than that, Your Honor. The cause of action of lack of informed consent doesn't apply, doesn't exist, when it's a battery.
Well, I understand. That's why I said you may be legally right. I just find it puzzling that the defense is, don't hold me responsible for this because what I did was far worse. You may continue.
Counsel, I'm going to pile on a little bit. I'm not nearly as learned as the Chief Justice. I'm just a country lawyer from Leesburg. But your client operated on the wrong breast, and you're telling us in the trial court that there was neither battery nor negligence. I'm trying to figure that out.
Oh, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting. My client operated on both sides because he was trying to create symmetry, and it was his intention to try to create symmetry by performing surgery on both sides. That's what he tried to do. The jury disagreed. The jury apparently found against my client on a theory of battery and lack of informed consent. I'm not saying my client didn't. What I'm saying is battery, if it happened, it was dismissed with prejudice, and therefore...
But you argued that there was no battery.
My client's position is there's no battery.
And your client's position is also that there's no negligence.
Because he properly, and he had an expert witness testify at trial, Your Honor, he properly performed bilateral breast surgery to try to create symmetry when one of the breasts that had been reconstructed was larger than the other.
And that then leads directly into the Chief Justice's question, which has already been answered. So, thank you.
But you see, the logic behind what you're saying is actually very simple. You're saying, what he did, if it was bad, could only have been battery.
That's right.
Well, is that true?
I believe it is in this particular set. In this procedure itself, plaintiff's argument is she only consented to right-sided surgery, not right-hand lap. He went beyond the scope, and he performed a second procedure, and went...
So if you negligently go beyond the scope, you think under Mayer that would permit a... tort battery claim outside the Medical Malpractice Act? Actually, I don't believe
there is a tort battery, a negligence battery claim. I think Mayer makes clear that when it is battery, when the facts give rise to battery itself, you cannot cloak it into a negligence theory and say, well, you should have been more careful, you should have...
The holding of the case, I think, was addressing a different issue, which is if it's just negligence, you can't cloak it into an intentional tort battery claim. It seems to me it was the opposite context.
It was the opposite context, Your Honor, because it was an opposite setting. He believed he was doing the intended procedure, and he was in the wrong place accidentally. He did not go beyond the scope of his consent. He did not do an extra procedure. When that happens, when one of those two alternatives happened, the Mayer decision states that is technical battery, and the Mayer decision states technical battery is battery, not negligence.
Aren't there situations where, I mean, does it have to be completely mutually exclusive? I mean, there'll be some facts where, look, the surgeon acknowledged, I didn't care what she said, I was going to do this, or whatever. And it obviously would have to be battery. And then others where there's just no way it could possibly be a battery, it's either negligence or nothing. But that there might be some where a fact finder could say it's A or B.
Right.
And so I think if you acknowledge that, then the question is, well, is this that kind of case?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I do acknowledge that. I believe the mayor decision put very clearly where the one end of the spectrum is. When it is actually negligence, you can't claim it's battery. I believe this is the other end of the spectrum. When it's, you've gone beyond the scope, you've done an extra procedure, you can't claim it's negligence. It's battery. There is a gray zone in the middle, and I recognize that. But this case is not in that gray zone. And thank you, Your Honor. My time is out.
All right.
Mr. Chief Justice, Honorable Justices, may it please the Court, my name is Edward Wiener. I'm accompanied today by my co-counsel, Michael Charnoff, and my client, Deb Brown, is here in the courtroom with us. Now, one thing that I just want to say right from the beginning is that there is no argument here that the trial court's findings and the jury verdict was fundamentally unfair, or that any reason that this doctor deserves another trial out of fairness and justice. I want to start off also by saying that the page in the record of Judge Devine's earlier ruling, which the Chief Justice pointed out is that the law of the case, he did not throw out battery as a theory. Page 97, his order indicates that count 3 for battery is dismissed. The rest of the case is still in. From day one.
So what you're saying is that the independent legal theory of battery was removed from the case and subsumed into a theory of negligence. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that actually both were in the case from the get-go. And the fact that we had a heading on that paragraph that said negligence, that doesn't bind us
but
to that category.
I understand that's your argument, but that doesn't seem to have been the trial judge's view. I mean, at least he repeatedly said, oh, no, battery is out. Battery is out. Aren't you stuck with that?
He did say that, but there were times when he referred to count 3 battery. Okay? Right. Because pleadings in this court enjoys brevity and simplicity. Just to call it, from day one, we knew exactly what this case was about. We said it operated on the wrong rest. Now, when he comes back, and it's not as counsel just told you, this whole case proceeded on the fact that they held up their document and said, we had consent. Here it is. I had consent to do bilateral surgery. And that's exactly what I did. And that's what the case went off on. When he answers, and his answer is, oh, yes, I did have consent, that makes it an overlay, and it is that both situation. It is both. But that's, he made that.
I mean, you would agree the record is pretty confusing on this point.
Well, you know, this case, the mayor, Lee Osborne, that came out last month, tried to count the angels on the head of a pin and draw that right line distinction. And
I don't know that you can be, but so have such a bright line. I mean, there, as counsel just pointed out, there's some bright areas, and then there's some gray in between.
And that substantial variance. And I firmly believe that the wrong breast, the left from the right, that is a substantial variance. So I absolutely believe that had we had mayor, this would be a battle. We didn't have that guidance then. But this case,
even if it were merely negligent to have ignored the earlier consent limitation?
I think this case is both. I don't believe this case can be tried without putting on those facts. Because
I don't know that it can be both, but it might be able to go to the jury on both. Maybe that's too subtle a distinction. But I mean, in other words, the jury has to sort out, okay, it could be negligence, could be battery, but we have to figure it out.
And they did in this case.
Okay.
They did, and we know that when we look to the record at page 509, because they actually gave us their notes. And they wrote, The defendant, was the defendant negligent in that he did not have informed consent? And they wrote, yes. If he was negligent, was his negligence a proximate cause of the plaintiff's injury? And they wrote, yes.
Mr. Weiner, can we rely on that as from the jury? This was not an interrogatory. This is your issues instruction, and then there are these notations on the side. Do we know whether the jury wrote yes, or the person who happened to have this sheet, maybe the foreman, wrote yes, or what do we know about that? Those notations?
We know, and the answer to your question is no, we cannot rely on that as the judgment, but we can look to it because if we look at just a few pages later on the finding instruction that is written in and signed by the foreman, I submit to the court, you don't need to be a handwriting expert to see that is the same person's writing. It is the form. If we believe that the foreman filled out the form granting the $1.3 million and signed his name, that is absolutely the same handwriting. There can be no question about that. And in the other cases that said you can't rely upon that, it was because those notes were speculative. There was room for interpretation. But with these notes, it is very clear what they found. And in this case, they found negligence. So I would argue that in this case, it's really moot whether the battery got submitted or not because they didn't find that. So it is indeed a harmless error.
But we need that one sort of cryptic statement to get there, right? Because as Justice Powell pointed out, we don't have special interrogatories. We don't have a specific verdict form that lays it out, and ordinarily we presume that if instructions were given appropriately, that we don't know what the jury decided upon.
Right. So I believe, in keeping with the earlier, and there's not many cases on that, but the cases that don't allow looking back to the jury's notes or where they're equivocal or subject to interpretation.
So if the battery instructions were wrong, just hypothesize that. And if we don't know if this went to the jury with a verdict that could have rested completely on negligence, which in theory, this fishing is the case, would permit that, no doubt, then what remedy would we have other than to order to go back to trial on a pure negligence construct with properly written in jury instructions on negligence with your argument about consent? Why would that be wrong from your perspective?
Well, I think that would be wrong because I think Judge Smith, who heard this case, we went through two full jury trials, right through deliberation twice. He got it right. He heard the evidence that came in from the witness stand. He heard Dr. Allison's defense, and that would not be serving justice in this case. And unlike the case before me, I am not seeking justice for all medical malpractice victims. I'm looking for justice for this case.
But once again, if it were true that a jury instruction was flawed because it addressed a claim that had been dismissed, assuming that's true, and that went to the jury with another theory that was perfectly valid, which is negligence consent problems, and we don't know what the jury did, why would not the right answer legally be we remand it back and we regrettably have to have another trial?
Your Honor, if that hypothesis was true, that would be a remedy. But I don't concede that is proper.
I'm not asking you to concede anything. I just want you to follow the logic and see where it leads.
I do understand that, but in this case, the judge took time to consider these jury instructions, and they fit the evidence exactly properly that came in. And what came in is that combination. They are technical battery, consent, which must be informed consent, and negligence are inextricably mixed. You can't unwind them in this situation. because of Dr. Allison's defense. He said, I operated on the correct breast, and I had consent to do it, and he had a document that he relied on. Of course, we had many more documents that showed that was incorrect, but that's what he relied on, that one piece of paper. It's a revision of bilateral breast reconstruction.
So he might have been negligent, but under Mayer, he would not have been guilty of intentional battery. Unless it was proven, he just said, I don't care what her consent said, I'm going to do what I think is right.
I think under Mayer, this would be a battery, because it is a substantial variance.
At least there was enough evidence for the jury to conclude he was making up, after the fact, the consent point, and to disregard his testimony, therefore, to conclude. I mean, in other words, it was a jury issue on that.
I absolutely. Oh, yes.
All right.
There certainly can be no element of surprise where they are claiming that there is a variance between the pleading and the jury instruction and the evidence that came in. There was absolutely no surprise. Counsel before me referenced our expert's designation. It is replete with lack of informed consent. It says it every which way. They brought two doctors, and that was the focus of their testimony. They came to court to say, yes, he did have consent, and he did everything proper. So there was absolutely no question.
What about the point that your conception of informed consent confuses consent, period, with informed consent, which is a negligence idea, and that you have to alert the person to the risks and dangers of a particular surgery, and that wasn't really the issue so much as consent, period?
Well, there could be a case where they were so, that substantial variance, where it could just be so out there, and the Mayer arguments again, right arm, left leg. But in this case, because he came in and said, and by the way, I also point the court to his own operative report, which was riddled with mistakes, mistaking right and left. But his defense was, I had consent to do what I do. That's what I intended to do the whole time. That's where we came
out. Right, I mean, at least the typical, in my mind, the typical informed consent cases, well, you might get infection. You might get this particular complication or whatever. That doesn't seem to be this case where for example, that there's a greater danger to the irradiated breast versus the non-irradiated breast. That doesn't seem to be the case. It's rather, she was clear, no, only this one, and then he operated on both, which sounds a lot like consent rather than informed consent.
Well, that's our position. But right. His position was, I informed her, and I did exactly what I planned to do. Right. And that's where it falls off the rails to that neat, clean textbook definition. Again, there's just no question in this case that the defendant knew from the very beginning that this was a wrong-sided surgery. And that's what we focused on, that's what the first trial was all about, and that's what the second trial was
about. That the defendant knew that it was intentionally a wrong-sided or negligently a wrong-sided.
Well, we don't, that's the whole thing. When we plead, we don't know what his intent was. We know the result, and we know it was wrong-sided.
But my only point is, count three was what was dismissed. That was the intentional battery tort.
Intentional battery.
So the case should have gone to the jury on negligence only, and negligence on the overlap of informed consent or lack of consent or whatever.
I disagree with that because when he answers, that I did it all correct, and I did inform her. Now we have to get into what did you inform her? And that's why they...
No, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that you're left with a negligence argument when battery is taken off the table.
Yeah.
So why did battery make it back on the table?
Because of his defense. Because he brought it. And we couldn't have known that when we first just said, you operate on the wrong side, and his answer is, no, I did this, and I did it with your permission. That's where it takes it down that battery. And not everyone's used the word battery. Technical matter, and in this fact situation, they are inextricably mixed. You cannot put on this case without putting on that evidence.
Your time has expired.
Thank
the court
you.
Is adjourned.
All rise.